Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors. On this week's show, we have a jam-packed episode, so we hope you enjoy it. So sit back, relax, grab a cold beverage, and let's talk everything there is to know in Louisiana outdoors. Guys, you hear us talk about it all the time. Our buddy Jay Thomas over at Blind Grass Camouflage Systems offers hunters and outdoorsmen the most realistic, durable, and versatile camouflage materials available on the market today. Let me ask you something. Are you tired of constantly having to rebrush your blinds every year or the smell of rotting grass in your blind? How about grass that pokes and cuts you through grass mats that have no depth in color and does not last an entire season? Well, the answer to that is probably yes, you've experienced that same scenario. And Blind Grass's patented synthetic blind grass will not rot, mildew, and is 100% waterproof. And it's available in mats or bundles, and it comes in natural gas color blends or is paintable to match your unique surroundings. Folks, do yourself a favor. If you're looking to camouflage your boat blind, kayak, permanent blind, or anything else that you're looking to blend in with your surroundings, check out our friends at Blind Grass Camouflage Systems. You can visit them on the web at blindgrass.com. This episode of Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors Podcast is also brought to you by SRD20 Boat Products. It shouldn't be hard work. SRD20 products use advanced nanotechnologies in its formulations explicitly designed for boat maintenance. From boat waxes for detailing to waterless washing wax products, SRD20 has boat care products that keep your boat protected from the elements and looking brand new. Visit them online at www.srd20.com and enter promo code LASTSTOP for 20% off all SRD20 products today. Hey everybody, what is going on? And welcome back to an all-new episode of Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors Podcast. As always, I got my main man, Jackson, in the studio with me on this episode, and we are glad to be back with all of you guys. We have been very busy over the last couple of weeks since our last episode. I know, Jackson, we did our last episode for the opening weekend of small game hunting season, which kind of kicks off our hunting season here in Louisiana. First weekend in October, and tonight as we sit, we are nearing the end of October already, and Halloween tomorrow night, man. So, boy, it went by fast, it seems like, huh?
Yeah, it went by faster than I wanted it to.
Faster than we wanted it to, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, the great thing is, A, it's hunting season right now. Something even better is now we are just a couple of weeks away from kicking off waterfowl season here in Louisiana. I know a lot of you who listen to the show, you might be in the northern portions of the flyways. A lot of you guys have probably already kicked off your waterfowl season. And from what I'm hearing, there's very, very good reports going on, Jackson, in the upper portions of the flyway. The boys in Canada have had a great kickoff to their season. A lot of birds are being killed. A lot of birds are on the move. And we have some cold weather that we're expecting down south here in Louisiana this week. We have a major, first major, probably, I guess you could say major for this one, as compared to the one that hit us in early October. You know, when early October hit, we got down into the 50s, we got down into the 60s at night. We had some pleasant mornings going out there and doing a little bit of small game hunting for some squirrels. But the cold front that we got kicking out, that's going to be kicking here tomorrow, they're going to have some winds kicking up pretty high, they're saying. And we're going to be getting down into the upper 30s and lower 40s for temperature. So that is what I consider our first major cold front, especially being down south in the lower portions of the flyway. So you looking forward to the cold front coming through?
I'm hoping it'll push some birds down.
Me too. I'm hoping it'll push some birds down. I really think it's going to push some birds down. From the reports that we're hearing from up north, I had a friend of mine that I talked to that's up in Michigan this past week, and he was telling me that they're having an excellent start to their season up north in Michigan. We were talking about numbers. I said, how are you guys doing up there? And he says, well, he says, we're 13, I think he told me 13 or 14 days into the season, and they had over 200 birds harvested so far. So he said, he acted like it was no big deal. And I'm like, man, that's a hell of a start to the season. And he said, yeah, he says, look, he says, we're off to a good start. He says, but he says, I don't think we've seen any push of migration, really. He said a lot of the birds that we're harvesting right now is all local birds. He said, so he was expecting with this big front that's, you know, coming through, that was going to push and get that migration really kicked off for them. So, you know, for us being public land hunters down here in Louisiana, if we kill 200 birds in a season, that's a really good season for us as public land hunters, right?
Yeah.
So we'd be very happy with that. And it sounded like that was just the kickoff to their season. So I'm wishing them the best. I think all of you guys in the upper portions of the flyways, like I mentioned, you're off to a good start, which is a great sign. The key down here, down in the south right now, has been really since the beginning of October. We haven't had any more cold weather come through for the most part, you know. We're sitting here this week with a full moon that's taking place right now. We have that first big cold front going to hit tomorrow, and I think that's really going to kick off the migration like our friends up in Michigan said. I think that's going to see a push of birds come down, and hopefully with the scouting that we're going to be doing now, we're kind of going to go into full throttle scout mode, huh, Jackson, over the next couple of weeks, try to locate some birds. We don't have water down here right now, which is a big story down for most of us in the south. Just been very, very dry this year. Kind of what a lot of our northern friends saw last year, and it really helped us down south because we had a lot of birds come down south last year, had a good season, and a lot of that was in part to having water where in the upper portions of the flyway, it was dry, you know? Yeah. It was dry in the breeding grounds, it was dry in the upper portions of the flyway. But down south, we had plenty of rain, plenty of water last year to hold ducks, and we did hold a lot of waterfowl last year. And it's going to be interesting to see if that maybe that role is reversed this year. If it's a situation where your areas just don't have water now, I don't think we could expect a whole lot of water for the first split of the season this year. But you would agree with that?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see much.
You know, we have a camp down in the Chaffalai Basin. I know a lot of the places we hunt in the timber that we look forward to hunting every year and getting some of those gadwalls, some of those mallards. A lot of those wood ducks, a lot of teal, right now they're bone dry. And we're not going to have access to that at all during the first split. And really looking at the extended forecast, they're not calling for much rain even through the end of December is what the forecast is showing. So don't know if we're going to have access to those areas. But on the western portion of the state, which you just finished fishing a high school bass tournament this week, you were down there the last couple of days. You were kind of looking at you were admiring some of the duck blinds and the duck habitat that they had on that end of the state. They had water on that side of the state from what it looked like. We're going to have water down here in the marshes of southeast Louisiana. You know, your Venice areas, your Delacro, your Biloxi Marsh, your, you know, other areas that border Lake Pontchartrain and eventually go out into the Gulf of Mexico. We don't have to worry too much about having water in those areas, I don't think. So I'm really looking for the two sides of the state to hold most of the birds that come down here to Louisiana this year. But if you're in the middle portions of the state, you know, you guys down in Richard K. Yancey, you guys down in, you know, Sherburn Management Area, Catahoula Lake, you know, all those, Dewey Wheels, all those areas, and even northern part of Louisiana up in Monroe, you know, you guys may be hurting for water right now, and I really think the duck outlook is not looking very good for those portions right now, you know? But who knows? I could be completely wrong. That's just a guess, you know? And that's what it's all about. We all like to guess. We all like to forecast what we think the season's going to turn out to be. But yeah, that's kind of what it looks like right now. That could change, you know, in the blink of an eye, but that's kind of what we're dealing with right now, right?
Yeah.
So, like I mentioned, we're going to be hitting the scouting trail here. Probably we did a little bit of scouting actually this morning locally, looking for some stuff that's holding some water, looking at it, kind of seeing what it looked like. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to be going out scouting another area. We're going to check out some coastal marsh tomorrow. Look at that. See if we have any birds showing up with this full moon that's coming in. But on this episode, what we were kind of thinking about doing, we're always looking, you and I, for new topics to discuss on the podcast, whether we have an interesting guest that we want to talk to, or it's something, a topic that you and I want to discuss. And something that we both were talking about the other day, we said, you know what, through the years with the podcast and with social media, the YouTube channel, that stuff, we get a lot of people ask us about equipment that we use and stuff that we like to use. Hey, is this brand good? Have you used this? Or, hey, we saw this in a video and we just like to get you guys' opinion on it, you know? And we were like, that would be probably pretty cool, because some of the podcast episodes that have done extremely well with listenership is some of the gear podcast. And that's always been something that's done really well for us on those episodes, getting a lot of listeners and a lot of questions from that. So what we thought would be kind of cool tonight on this episode is we get together, we kind of talk about some gear and some categories that pertain to duck hunting and waterfowling gear that we really like and that we've had some success out of over the last couple of seasons and maybe previous years before that. So when we're talking about gear, as far as that goes, Jackson, and us being public land waterfowl hunters, what are some of the areas or products specifically that you find that has made a big difference in our waterfowl hunting over the last couple of seasons or previous years to that?
Well, one of the main things is waders. Waders, talking about walking through the water. That's my main reason why I think waders is the main thing, because I love walking through the water. It's one of the things I love to do, and I have to do it every hunt.
You like getting dirty. You like getting in the water, in the swamp, in the marsh, whatever it is, and you like to. A good pair of waders definitely pays off for you, right?
Yeah, I mean, if I go duck hunting and I don't step in the water, something's wrong.
Yeah, you like getting out the boat. You know, although we have a boat, which we'll probably touch on that in a little while, that's a big portion of our gear. You know, having gear is a boat, obviously. Waders, you like to get out of the boat, so waders are very important for you. And what do you use? I mean, do you feel like you have to have an expensive pair of waders? Do you use a pair of expensive waders, or fill everybody in on kind of what you use and what works for you?
No, I mean, I don't use a very expensive pair of waders. Like, the waders I have right now, I think cost maybe like $100 when I bought them, and they do the job just well. It's perfectly fine.
And they're neoprene. They're typical neoprene waders, which is what we all kind of start out hunting with, you know, and using. And, yeah, I believe your pair of waders we got were a $100 pair off of Amazon. They're kind of one of those no-name brands that are off of Amazon. And I was the same way, you know. When I started out, I was using, you know, the cheapest waders I could find because I was on a budget, obviously. But as I got through the years, I said, well, maybe if I spend more money on some of the higher end stuff, it'll last me longer. And you know, specifically what I'm talking about is neoprene waders, kind of what we're talking about here. And I ended up buying a pair of waders that was, you know, $300 or $400, thinking that I was going to get a lot more bang for my buck, a lot more use out of it. I was kind of tired of having to replace my cheap neoprene waders every year, or maybe get two seasons out of them if I was lucky. And I thought that there was something better out there probably at the time. And, you know, I went to a more expensive pair of waders. And like I said, they were neoprene, same material that they were made with. They had all these claims that they were going to be thicker, better, you know, all that type of stuff. And to be honest with you, they ended up turning out not to be, you know. So I learned very quickly, and that'll make you even more mad than buying a cheap pair of waders that goes bad on you pretty quickly, is when you spend $300 or $400 on a pair of neoprene waders or whatever product it is that claims to be a lot better. Your buddies are telling you, oh, man, you got to get those because I got those and they're the best thing since sliced bread. And they turn out not to be, you know. So that particular pair that I had bought that was my first expensive pair, man, they were leaking in the crotch after a couple of hunts. They tore just like the inexpensive ones that I had. And I learned very quickly that, hey, just because I spent $200 or $300 more on those, that it wasn't necessarily the best thing for me. So I think that, you know, there has been some advances in technology when it comes to waders, such as the ones that I use now, which are a breathable type wader. Because if you like me, guys, I'm a big guy. I'm 6'3", I'm 300 pounds. And, you know, you look like a, you get into a pair of neoprene waders, it's not the easiest thing to get into nowadays, you know, when you're that big. And you look like a 10-pound sausage casing with a 1-pound sausage stuffed into it. I mean, it's a, it gets pretty uncomfortable pretty quickly. And, you know, you end up sweating in those things. You find out you're getting cold. When breathable waders came out, I was like, okay, I'm into this. I could get into this. Let me try these things out. And man, when I tell you, Jackson, they're so much more lightweight. You haven't got a pair of those yet, but you'll probably eventually move into those. Once you get a pair of those, you're gonna love them. But they're lightweight, they're breathable. They protect you against the wind, just like the old neoprene used to do. I don't get cold in them, but I can take them on, take them off very easily. And that's a piece of equipment in regards to waders that has changed my hunting and made it a lot easier for me over the last couple of seasons, going to a breathable wader. Especially down south, because, you know, down south we have cold days you hunting, and then you have days where it's like it is now. It's 80-some degrees maybe in December or January down south, you know. So you don't know what type of conditions you're going to get. You go from hot to cold, back, you know, back and forth. And having a pair of breathable waders that protects you against the elements, keeps you warm when it is cold, and protects you against the wind, but also keeps you dry. And you can also wear when the weather's hot. That makes a big difference, man. So that, you're right, a good pair of waders is a big deal. And, you know, whatever fits you and fits your budget, that's obviously what you're going to lean toward. But if you could go to a breathable wader, I would highly suggest that for people getting into waterfowl hunting. Or for some of you guys that have been waterfowl hunting your whole life and you just never tried them, I would recommend the breathable waders. That's a good thing, I think, in my opinion. So, yes, definitely waders. That's something that's important, especially if you're a mobile waterfowl hunter. You're on the move a lot, you know. What else? What else is something that you use equipment-wise, or that we've used equipment-wise as a group of us hunting together? What's something else that you like?
Another thing that I like is when we're hunting is that eye black.
Face paint.
Gotta have eye black.
You like eye black. And what's the reasoning behind the eye black? Face paint. Why you like face paint? What's the deal there? I know the obvious reason. That's probably what you're going to say. But what's your reasoning behind face paint? Because you've always been a face paint guy. Ever since you lit, I was covering you up with face paint. And then when you were able to kind of start doing it on your own, you stuck with the face paint. Why is that?
Because you look cool.
So there's no hunting aspect of it other than the fact that you look cool? Is that what it's about?
And because I'm younger, I don't have a beard yet. So, I mean, I got to cover up my cheeks.
Yeah, you got them baby cheeks still. Even though you're a 13-year-old, you're getting a little peach fuzz out on that face now, though. I see it kicking in. Got that little stalker mustache going, kind of. That little stash is starting to kick in. So it's probably not going to be too long. You're going to be able to have a little something going on there on that face to cover it up.
I'll still be doing it, though.
You'll still be using the face paint?
Yeah.
So the face paint, like the young kids call it now, the drip, I guess. It gives you a little drip to have in the videos, have whenever you're out there in the field.
Them after pictures when you with the ducks and the straps, you just look real cool.
Yeah, it's all about the pictures nowadays, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
That's kind of what it's about. So, but obviously it's very effective. You know, you see guys like Phil Robertson and the whole Duck Commander crew, Jason, all those guys. Man, I remember as a kid seeing them on TV with all that face paint and those beards, and I thought that was the baddest thing that I had ever seen. I was like, man, those dudes look like they some killing machines, pretty much, you know. And really, they were some killing machines, and they always have been. But yeah, I've never personally been a face paint guy. I mean, I have used it, and I will use it. I keep it in my bag, but I just don't like the feel of it, I guess, so much. And now since I'm older, I'm blessed. I have that jet black hair. I could grow a beard now, you know, and kind of cover up the face, so I don't have to worry about birds flaring off of it too much. But I'll still cover up, and I know a couple of my friends that I hunt with, they're firm. They're like you. They believe firmly in face paint. So that's definitely something that's inexpensive as far as gear that I know you use and a lot of hunters use that I think is very beneficial. you know, to use it and keep in your blind bag, because it could come in handy, especially those bright sunny days where you're looking up, you know, you having to look up and that sun's, you maybe don't have that blind position the way, you know, perfectly with the way that the sun's coming up. You might be facing into the sun, that type of stuff. And it can be very, very beneficial in that situation. So, I see where you're coming from with that. But another piece of equipment that I've personally used over the last couple of years, a major change to my hunting style, is my shotgun in general. And, you know, and people that I hunt with know very well now that we hunt together pretty regularly, know that I made a major switch, not brand wise, in a shotgun, but gauge wise over the last couple of years. So, you know, when I was a youth coming up hunting waterfowl, my daddy got me my first gun. I was a big kid, you know. So he felt that I didn't need a 410 starting out, you know, like a lot of kids start out with. So he started me out with a 20 gauge, a little crack barrel, H&R crack barrel, you know, 20 gauge shotgun. Had one shot and you better make it count. You know, you had to get good very quickly when you only have one shot as a kid starting out. But it was something that was inexpensive. But he thought, hey, you can handle a 20 gauge, so I'm going to start you out with a 20 gauge, and then you're going to move up from there. And I used that 20 gauge for about 2 years, and then I moved up to a 12 gauge. I got my first 12 gauge. You know, I think it was, if I remember right, it was a Remington 870, an old Remington 870 that I was handed down. And I was using that, moved to a 12 gauge, and I never looked back after that. I was always under the notion of, hey, you waterfowl hunt, you got to use a 12 gauge. You know, that's the best thing. It reaches out further. It has more bang for the buck. You know, you're going to knock birds down. You're going to have less cripples. All that type of stuff is what I always used. And I started out, I kind of transitioned through the years, like with that Remington 870. I used that for years and years and years. And then eventually I got into a semi-automatic, and I started kind of working my way up tier-wise with that. I ended up going to where I was years ago. I was shooting my first high-dollar semi-automatic I had was a Franke semi-automatic. And then I moved in from there. I went into a Benelli, bought that, and then, you know, used that for years, and then moved up to another Benelli, went through different styles. But a couple of years ago, I decided to, I had a friend of mine that had a 20 gauge semi-automatic, and I said, hey, you know, I'm hearing guys that are using 20 gauges. They're starting to shoot 20 gauges again, you know, more and more. And the pandemic was hitting. We were having trouble getting 12 gauge ammunition, because that was the first thing in steel shot that was hard to find. You know, it was 12 gauge because more guys shot that, obviously. So I said, hey, let me use a 20 gauge. That 20 gauge, I want to hunt with it, and I want to see what that's about again. And when I used that 20 gauge, I was just blown away. It blew me away again. And I was like, man, this thing is lighter. When I pull it up to get on target to shoot a duck, it swings better for me. I liked everything about it better than my 12 gauge. And I was like, although I love my, or thought I loved my 12 gauge, that 20 gauge was just something that I just fell in love with right away.
Yeah.
So I went out and I bought me a brand new 20 gauge semi-automatic. I bought me a Stoger M20, and I wanted something that was, you know, affordable, because I was like, if I don't stick with this, hey, at least it's something that I could pass down to you or your brother to waterfowl hunt. It'd be another gun that y'all can use, and it's something that we could keep in the family. Well, since then, I haven't put it down. I have not put it down. And for those reasons that I mentioned is the reason I haven't put it down. And I had friends tell me, well, you ain't going to be able to reach out and get the birds as far as we normally do. And you can attest to that. You've hunted with me. I've had friends hunt with me now. And have you seen a big difference between when I shot a 12 gauge and a 20 gauge as far as the birds, me being able to reach out and get the birds?
Well, not really.
Not really at all. And I took it last year. I kind of got one of my buddies who was making fun of me. We went down to Kaplan with him and made a goose hunt, a goose and duck hunt. We were doing some speck hunting last year, and I showed up over there, excuse me, and he's like, man, what you shooting? What kind of gun you shooting? I said, well, I got a Stoger 20 gauge. And he's like, dude, he's like, you brought a 20 gauge to goose hunt? And I said, I started, I was like, yeah, I did, you know? And he's like, man, he's like, you got to have a 12 gauge. You got to have 3.5 shot, you know, to be able to reach up and touch those geese. And that's what they use, you know. So I don't really do a lot of goose hunting nowadays, you know. When we were kids, we'd goose hunt. We'd creep them in the fields. And that was just a different style of hunting than being in a pit blind and hunting geese. And, man, I said, that's what I have confidence in. I said, I'm going to be all right. I have an extended full choke on this thing, you know. I said, I'm going to be okay. And sure enough, man, I was knocking geese down last year, and he was kind of surprised by that. He's like, God dang. He's like, that thing's, yeah, it does reach out and touch them and pretty much doing everything that the 12 gauges were doing. So after that, it really convinced me. I was like, man, that's it. I'm probably not going to put this thing down for quite some time, you know. And now I hear guys that are picking up 28 gauges. That's also become kind of popular since the pandemic because you can get ammunition through the pandemic pretty easily for it. Small gauge hunting has become popular all of a sudden, you know, for waterfowl. And to be honest with you, if, you know, you've never tried it, guys, I would recommend it. I think you'll probably fall in love with it like I did, just because of the reasons that I've talked about here. But that has made a huge difference for me in equipment-wise over the last couple of seasons because it's so lightweight. It swings so well when you're trying to get on target. And, you know, to me, it makes it more sporty almost, you know, it just makes it more sporty. And I don't really know why I'm saying more sporty because it does everything that my 12 gauge did, you know, but I love it, man. I absolutely love going to a 12 gauge, and that's something equipment wise that has made a big difference for me over the last couple of seasons. So now you shoot a 12 gauge, you haven't shot a 20 gauge. Well, did you, we ever had you with a 20 gauge? I think we did. At one point, you were shooting a pump at one point, you know? So, you know, you may ultimately try to go to that. I know tonight we stopped by Cabela's. We were doing a little shopping for you. And we picked up a Benelli Super Black Eagle, I think it was.
Yeah.
A Super Black Eagle, a 28 gauge? Is that what it was? We held a 20. I had you hold a 20 and a 28 gauge. Yeah. What you thought about those two guns?
The light. Very light.
You like the way they filled when you shouldered them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty sweet.
Very light, just a very skinny barrel. Skinnier barrel than a 12.
Yeah, the gauges are different. They're smaller gauges, so you're going to get a skinnier barrel, smaller shell, you know, that type of stuff. But, man, when you put them to your shoulder, they feel so good and so natural, it seems like, you know? So, you know, that's something, a 28 gauge is something that I'm even considering, maybe kind of trying to add that to our family, you know, collection of guns that we got, and maybe some of us will do a little waterfowl hunting with a 28 gauge sometimes.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, it's so easy to find shells for 28
gauge. Well, yeah, I mean, that could change at any time, you know, but you do see the shells stocked with it pretty well, it looks like. And it's just something cool because the type of hunting we do, which we're not always in the open marshes hunting. We do a lot of timber hunting as well. So a lot of our shots are a lot of times, what, 20 yards, 30, 40 yards, somewhere in there. So those smaller gauges are very good for that type of hunting, you know. So we could probably put even like a 28 gauge in and do quite a bit of hunting and probably do some damage with a 28 gauge and have a lot of fun with it at the same time, you know. Yeah. So, but other than, okay, so we talked about guns. We talked about eye black, you know, covering up, you know, face paint, that type of stuff. We talked about waders. That's some major portions of a waterfowl's arsenal when they're talking about gear. Let's kind of delve into decoys a little bit. Like, you have your traditional floating decoys. We don't do any kind of dry land hunting down here for the most part, especially on public land. We don't do any kind of, you know, field decoys, standing, you know, decoys, that type of stuff. So most of our decoy use and usage is going to come from floating decoys because we're hunting in water, or motion decoys, right?
Yeah.
So let's start out with traditional decoys, floating decoys, first of all. Me and you typically look for good bargains when it comes to that. Because once again, I find that really, you know, I've bought more expensive decoys. I used to think, hey, okay, if I buy these more expensive decoys, I'm going to get a lot more use out of them. And that could sometimes be the case with some brands. But not always. So what have me and you kind of geared toward when it comes to traditional floating decoys? What do we use for those of the people listening?
Like, you talk about brands?
No, well, brands or style. Yeah, brands, I guess you could say, or styles. Obviously, it's a floating decoy. It's a plastic decoy. So, yeah, brands, I guess we could say. Like, what do we typically use?
Like Game Winner or like Northern Flight.
Yeah. So, Game Winners Academy's brands, a lot of times we've bought those, especially when they came out with the Flex style a couple of years ago. We really like those because I find that the first generation of the Game Winner decoys were just too brittle. They were lightweight, which was very nice, but they were so cheaply made that they would crack real easy. They would take on water, and we stopped buying those when they came out. We stopped buying those pretty quickly. They just wasn't lasting and holding up. But then they came out with the Flex. I forgot what they called it exactly, Flex Float or something like that, which were those you could kind of squeeze them. They were more flexible, more durable, and we really liked those a lot. You know, so they were affordable. We use those. We still got some of those. I know we got some redheads. We use a lot of those in the coot decoys that we use. Some of those diver decoys, those are a good option, I find, and we've had good success with those. But then also, we're blessed to have a Cabela's, and we have a Bass Pro here in our area as well. And I've always been a big believer in Cabela's hunting gear. You know, I've worked for Cabela's. I worked for them for almost 13 years, and even as a kid, my dad, when it came to hunting gear, he always bought a lot of our hunting gear through Cabela's because it was good quality stuff, but it was still affordable also at the same time. So we do buy some Cabela's decoys as well when it comes to our traditional floating decoys. And the Northern Flight series I still find is a very good brand that Cabela's makes that's geared toward waterfowl hunting specific stuff, you know. So the Northern Flight gear tends to hold up pretty good, but it's also not the price of some of your high-end premium decoy brands that you see out there that might have like flocked heads on them, which we kind of talked about that the other day. What's your opinion on flocked head decoys for public land hunting guys that are blue-collar guys trying to either get into the sport or maybe just don't have the funds to go out there and buy high-end decoys because you're banging them around, dragging them through marshes, doing all kind of stuff. What's your opinion on that type of stuff?
I mean, like, if you're hunting, like, the swamp or whatever, like, it just depends on what kind of, or, like, the conditions that you're hunting. If you're hunting the swamp and it's public land, I mean, you got the sticks and banging them around the boat. I mean, they're just not going to stay all perfect and pretty and sparkly.
Yeah, that's right. They don't. And flocked heads for, if you're somebody who's a public land hunter, you're dragging them, you're throwing them in the back ends of a truck, you're throwing them in the boat, banging them around, all that type of stuff. Look, I'm going to be honest, be the first to tell you, just like everybody else that sees them in the store, they look awesome in the store. They look great. They look realistic, most of the brands that are out there with flocked heads, that type of stuff. But, man, when you're doing all that stuff that we mentioned, they don't stay looking that way, you know?
I mean, if you're like a farmer or you have some farmland or something, like a cornfield, like in your hunting.
Lease, you know.
And you can, like, hang them from your foil or something, that is different. Because, like, I mean, you're keeping them in tip-top shape and you're only throwing them in the water and all that. But, like, I mean, if you're hunting around, like, the sticks and, like, you're banging them on
harsh conditions, let's say that.
Yeah.
Harsh conditions that most public land waterfowl hunters like us are going to be in, you know. Yeah, I agree with you. Then that's probably not your best bet to go that route. We don't buy them anymore because of that, right?
Yeah.
So we stick to something that's affordable. We're always looking for good deals at the end of the season. That's a great time when it comes to traditional floating decoys to be able to pick up, you know, those at great prices. Like last year, I know we ran into a great deal at our local Walmart, man. They had Flambeau decoys, which some of you guys are going to say, Flambeau, man, that ain't worth a crap, you know. But I'm going to tell you, I've hunted over Flambeau decoys for many, many years when I pick them up on sale and get, you know, and I've had friends that's bought them. And we kill just as many ducks over brands like that than we do over some of the high-end brands that we've had through the years, you know.
Yeah.
And if you guys can't tell already, we are bargain shoppers, but we look for a good bang for the buck. You know, we do take care of our equipment, so maybe that's why some of the lower end stuff that we think that we get good deals on and that we do get good deals on, maybe they last us a little bit longer because we do take care of our gear, you know? So we don't just abuse it and then throw it, you know, throw it, you know, in the shed and expect it to last, or, you know, bang it all around and expect it to last. We do try to take care of our gear. We clean them, you know, the season's over, we take them in, we clean them with soap and water, and then we go out there and we try to use them the next year. We go through the ones that didn't hold up real well, we throw them, you know. But when you find in cheaper gear, or, you know, lower end stuff, I guess, on clearance at the end of the season, you could buy a lot of that stuff and stock up on it, and it'll last you through the seasons. You know, you have stuff, or if something does go bad, hey, throw it away and put you some more stuff in there. You know, I think that with decoys, it's gotten a little outrageous, some of the prices on a lot of that stuff nowadays, because, you know, when I was coming up, I remember as a kid, when you bought decoys, you got 12 decoys. It was a dozen decoys that you got in a box, you know. Nowadays, you're paying, you know, $100 for a half dozen if you buy high-end stuff. You know, even low-end stuff, you're paying $50 for low-end decoys for a half dozen, you know. So if you're, you know, replacing decoys, or whether it's high-end or low-end, and you're going to have to replace them at some point, no matter what price point they come in at, then it gets expensive very, very quickly, you know. So I would tell you this, you know, just because what we do is not necessarily going to be what you guys agree with or what works for you. Do what works for you and what your budget fits you best for your hunting style. And really, at the end of the day, that's what it's going to come down to. What fits your budget and what fits your hunting style. And go with the best decoy, obviously, that you think is going to work best for that, you know. But we've had a lot of success with, you know, not necessarily going with the high-end stuff and buying some other stuff that we feel is pretty decent quality at an affordable rate for floating decoys, right?
Yeah.
Now, switching gear to motion decoys. Motion decoys is a big controversy always between waterfowl hunters. What works best? What's some of the products, Jackson, and I'll let you take this segment. What's some of the products as far as motion decoys that we have used over the last several seasons that we like a lot and we've had some success with?
Well, one of them, the main one is the Lucky Duck Splashers, which we use a lot, which I think Lucky Duck's probably the main brand for motion decoys, and my favorite brand.
That's your favorite brand?
Yeah.
So the Lucky Duck HD Splasher, kind of tell everybody, if they're not familiar, what that is. Give them a visual of what the Lucky Duck HD Splasher is.
Well, the Lucky Duck Splasher, it's a decoy. It's just a mallet decoy that sits on the water, and it floats on the water with a little pad, and it has a... And you screw it onto a little battery that you have to charge, like just like every other one. And it has some wings on it that has these little like rubber flaps on it.
These
little tabs.
So it's a spinning wing decoy that sits on the water.
Yeah.
But you have these little rubber tabs on the wings that you can move. You can either put them down or you can keep them tucked in.
Yeah. And it just, it keeps like say if you're hunting duck seed or something like that, or like some thick stuff that you want to get all the black water from underneath it, it'll make like a little hole like the duck hit the water or something.
Yeah, it looks like a duck that's either getting up off of the water or landed in the water. So what we found for us, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but what we found for us is some of those areas that we hunt a lot of thick vegetation and stuff like that, like in the swamps down here in Louisiana. We were having trouble, like, with some of our other motion decoys that we were using. Like, the Pulsator is one. It just wasn't a good fit for that, which we love the Pulsator. We'll probably talk about that in a second, actually. Any of those bilge pump-type motion decoys that we were using, you couldn't use that in that thicker vegetation, such as, like, duck seed. So, all you boys that have holes in the timber, maybe you have duck seed in those holes. You have some kind of vegetation. It's not just that good, clear, black water. You know, the Lucky Duck HD Splasher, we found very quickly when we tested the first one we had bought that it worked really well in that type of situation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like Jackson said, it looks almost like a duck that's landing on the water, kind of clears out that duck seed or that vegetation and makes that little good, clear spot with those tabs hitting the water. And then also, what I like about the HD Splasher is those little tabs also create water movement as well. Yeah. So if you get a day where we don't have a lot of wind and, you know, you're looking for some movement on the water, but you can't maybe run a Pulsator or something like that, you have those tabs on those wings spinning constantly doing two things. It creates motion, but it also creates sound as well. So it sounds like a duck kind of getting up off the water or landing on the water, their wings hitting the water, kind of.
Yeah.
So the HD Splasher's one that we really like a lot. We recommend that to guys that are looking for something to add a little bit of motion to. That's one that we would definitely give a thumbs up on, Jackson.
Yeah.
What else? What else do we typically use that we like? Okay, so we have to talk about the obvious one we talked about. I mentioned it just now. Is from Higdon, the Pulsator. The Pulsator has been around for years and years and years. And when Higdon came out with the Pulsator, that was an absolute home run because they took that bilge pump, put it on a duck butt, and, man, it looked like a duck feeding. It was creating movement constantly, spitting that water out of the butt of that duck butt, and just an awesome concept that Higdon came out with. And I'm assuming, I could be wrong, guys. You may be able to correct me, and somebody may be listening that says, well, Higdon didn't create that. The first that I was aware of was the Pulsator that Higdon, of its style. Now, I see some of the other brands. I think Avian X is making one. I know Lucky Duck came out with one. And also Mojo had created one that they tried. They were the first ones that I know kind of tried to mimic the Pulsator from Higdon. And, you know, I can't speak for some of those brands. I haven't tried some of those new ones out, but I did try out the one from Mojo that they had came out with years ago and just wasn't impressed with it. It didn't hold up nearly like the Higdon. Didn't have the motion like the Pulsator did. None of that stuff really came close, in my opinion. You know, yeah. Now, I know that they had tried to revamp that product a little bit because they had had a lot of complaints on it. And since then, I never bought another one. So I don't know if that product's gotten better than it was. But I would tell you, if you were looking at buying, you know, at least back then, I could say that. And I'm not trying to badmouth any of these companies because they all make good products in their own right in certain areas. But, you know, if I was looking at the Pulsator or I was looking at the Mojo, there's no doubt I would spend my hard earned money on the Higdon Pulsator before I'd buy the other one in that situation. So that is definitely something that if you got open water, guys, you're looking to create a lot of motion on those days where you just don't have the elements and Mother Nature helping you, such as the wind and stuff like that, the Pulsator is awesome. And they've improved it over the years, right?
Yeah.
Because the one that we had, the original one, it had a battery pack that was attached to it. You had to hook the battery up, throw it in the water with the battery pack, and the battery pack kind of served as your anchor. That was kind of your decoy anchor. But now they've changed it up some. They've improved it. They've made it better. They have a lithium battery inside of it now. You don't have that big battery pack that you got to carry with you with the Pulsator, and you could just recharge the batteries. It's also rechargeable now. That's nice. A lot of the motion decoys now are going to rechargeable now, so that's pretty cool. So the Pulsator, that'd probably be definitely one in our arsenal that we use that we recommend, I would say. What else? What else as far as motion decoys? Anything else that you – I know you don't like a certain style. Kind of touch on that a little bit.
Well, one particular one is that I don't like is the spinning main decoys. I don't like the poles and the putting the ducks on the poles. I just don't like it.
And why is that? Why you don't like the traditional style?
It just don't look natural. Like, just the pole sticking out the water. I mean, it's not actually in the water like the ducks would be. It just don't look natural. And trying to put it in the water and then take it out, like with the boat moving, it's just pain.
Yeah, I know. Hey, look, if you hunt from a boat or you hunt in water, especially like soft bottom marshes or bottom lands, it does. It gets difficult. Or you're running, you're trying to set out the decoys, you're bumping the boat against it, you knock it over. I can't tell you how many of us have probably lost the traditional spinning wing decoys on the poles because we bump them with the boat, or the wind, you think it's in there solid and the wind starts pumping real hard, a good north wind, it blows it over, that type of stuff. Or, you know, like us being public land hunters, you constantly fighting fluctuating water conditions, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, you got a pole for it. The little pole that they give you with these things is an absolute joke to begin with. I mean, nobody is going to use that. That's why they started selling pole extensions for them and all that type of stuff. Or you're trying to make homemade pole extensions. So you got to say, well, do I bring that with me? Do I not bring it with me? You don't know what the water might be, how deep it's going to be. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that becomes a hassle with those, and I understand that definitely, you know, your point there. So that may not be a good fit for some people, but for a lot of people, that's they've killed a lot of birds and harvested a lot of birds over the years on those things. And when they first came out, I mean, Mojo developed the original Mojo. it was, you look back at the old videos and the stories that they tell about that, it was absolutely stupid what that thing produced, you know. And then eventually everybody kind of followed their path and started creating their own, you know. Yeah. Which is something that's very popular in the decoy industry. Somebody makes a good product, everybody's going to piggyback off of that, and they're going to try to, you know, go and follow what they're doing, follow their lead on that. So yeah, that's, you know, I can understand you don't like that, but for a lot of people, it probably is a great product to add to their arsenal, you know, that they can use. Also, something inexpensive, or what used to be inexpensive, I say, there's really nothing inexpensive hardly anymore, is quiver magnets. That's another thing for motion decoys that's a great fit. So that's something that I would tell you. Add a couple of quiver magnets. Lucky Duck, once again, that brand makes some really good ones that seem to last.
Adding on to that, going back to like the pulsator and all that, I mean, I know there was one brand, I couldn't remember which one, they had the quiver butt. It was a butt, and it floated on the water and it just made motion. It didn't spurt water, it just shaped.
Yeah, correct. More, looks a little bit more realistic than just the old quiver magnet. And there's several brands. Actually, there was some, Mojo was doing it with Duck Commander. I think they still are, actually. They make one. We had bought a couple of those. And they worked pretty good. Those were pretty good. The Flocker Flickers, I thought that was an awesome idea when Mojo came out with that a few years ago. I still think it's a great concept. The problem is I bought two brand new sets of Flocker Flickers when they came out, and they didn't even make it through the season. I was very disappointed with that product as far as the durability, because no matter what I did, water was seeping into them and getting into them. And once that happened, they were locking up. They wouldn't work no more. Now, I know that they went back to the drawing board. Mojo did. They worked. They got a second generation now of the Flocker Flicker with the little floating, you know, and then the wings spinning on top. When they worked inside the spread, they looked awesome. It looked like duck wings on the water moving around, made your spread come alive. But honestly, I got burnt by those two sets that I bought, and I haven't trusted buying that product again from them just because I didn't have good luck with them, and I thought that was absolute horse hockey, you know. So I didn't like that aspect of it. But yeah, that, and then, you know, the one thing that we can't go without talking about that made a big difference for us last season is you don't have to even go and spend big money on these high-end motion decoys. We used a jerk string last year. We didn't even talk about that at all. But we'd be doing injustice if we didn't talk about a jerk string briefly.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a new thing with the motion generation that's coming out. I mean, they got brands creating, like, jerk string machines that, like, it just pulls it for you.
They'll do it for you now, yeah. That's pretty cool. I mean, hey, if you got that to fit your budget and you got the place you can use it, I'd probably use it too, you know. Yeah. If I don't have to sit there and jerk on the string all day long, I wouldn't do it either. But most of us don't have that luxury, you know?
I mean, to me, though, I mean, like, really, it's just about finding the birds. If the birds want to be where you're at, then they're going to go there.
There's no doubt. If you own the X, you're going to have better. Some days you don't need decoys.
Yeah.
If you own the X, you could kill birds without decoys sometimes. You know?
I mean, sometimes you will need motion. Like, if you have birds that are, like, migrating, say, over your area or something, you may need some motion to come and bring them down. But, I mean, if they want to be there, they're going to be there.
Well, motion definitely plays a role. There's no doubt about it, you know. And some days they want a lot of motion. Other days they don't want a lot of motion. But, look, my thought on that is that when you look at an aerial imagery drone shot of birds, actual live birds on the water, what do you see?
A lot of movement.
Birds aren't sitting there still. They're alive and they're moving. So I think motion, in my opinion, is crucial to your spread. I think motion, and I think realistic water sound. I think, which that kind of brings me to another product. We had this gentleman on the podcast with us before, George Parker, who's the owner and founder of Bluebird Waterfowl. He created the Animator product. And that product is catching fire right now across the United States with waterfowl hunters. And he created something with water sound in the Animator that is very intriguing and interesting if you into the research of waterfowl and, you know, as far as making a better hunt, what to do to make a better hunt, to have better hunts, that type of stuff. So his product creates, you know, uses existing motion decoys, but also adds that water sound, that realistic water sound of ducks on the water. And that's something that I think is absolutely something that he's hit a home run with there, you know? So,
yeah.
But once again, it's just part of being realistic. It looks realistic. It sounds realistic. A duck thinks it's a duck. You know, if it sounds like a duck and quacks like a duck, they think it's a duck, you know? So, yeah. So that kind of touches on motion. That's some of the stuff that we've talked about and that we've used over the last couple of years. That's some products that we think would benefit you guys. Whether you're, you know, been an experienced hunter, you're probably using a lot of those products that we talked about. Or if you're getting into waterfowl hunting, we like to educate guys that are getting into waterfowl hunting on this podcast and on our social media platform. So hopefully you guys can have a starting point if you're getting into the sport to go out and buy some of these products if it fits your budget, you know. So what's some of the other things that's made us? We talked about, you know, we mentioned a boat earlier, obviously. So boats, you know, that there's a wide range of boats now. So if you have access, you know, to having a boat, you know, something that's worked for us specifically for where we hunt is a smaller boat. You know, a lot of you out there that are listening to this episode, you're probably, if you have a duck hunting rig, you're probably running 17, 18-foot boats, which is a great fit for a lot of people. But for us, a smaller boat fits our needs, you know, and kind of fill everybody in on what we run as far as where we hunt at.
I mean, like, we run a War Eagle boat. War Eagle's one of the best boats I've probably ever
seen. One of the OGs of the industry, the waterfowl industry, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's just, like, our size of boat that we have is just perfect because, I mean, it's easy to get through those little cuts and in between those tight trees and everywhere we need to go.
Yeah, we run a 1648. That's the boat size that we run. And we've ran that now for about 5 or 6 seasons, maybe even going on our 7th season now. And we've paired that with a couple of different motors. We originally had a 35-horsepower long tail that we used down here that was a freaking workhorse. It never stranded us once. It never got us stuck anywhere with shallow water that we couldn't get out of. And then eventually we made it. Now we got a surface drive on there. We run a 23 surface drive. Just trying to keep it lightweight. It's lighter weight than the 35 long tail was, even though it's a surface drive. So we run that situation. And the reason we run that scenario and that setup is because, like you said, we hunt a lot of timber. We hunt a lot of areas down here in the swamp that is tight areas that we just can't maneuver a big boat into. And, you know, a lot of guys I know that have bigger boats, they say, well, I'll get just about anywhere I got to go. Well, there's spots that I've seen our boat barely fits through and that we can't get into, you know. So that tells me that the areas that we hunt, there's no way we'd be able to make it with a larger boat for us, you know. But we are very versatile. We kind of go from one side of the state to the other side of the state sometimes to try to, you know, pursue waterfowl as they're moving through the migration. And we kind of hunt all over the place. So, you know, when we take that smaller boat, like that's so good in the tight spots and the timber and stuff like that, and you take it to open water, you know, big areas like, say, Venice, Louisiana, where you're actually getting into Mississippi River and trying to run down the Mississippi River to, you know, other areas to hunt ponds, backwater ponds off of the Mississippi River. Well, guess what? We don't go to Venice, especially in our boat, because of that. We're not taking a boat that's 16 foot in the Mississippi River. I'm not going to put you as my children in harm or anybody else that's hunting with me in harm in a small craft like that going down into the Mississippi River. So that limits us. We can't go down to Venice in our boat and we can, but we're not going to do it. We're not going to go down there and hunt those areas that have fantastic water hunting in our boat. Because we have a smaller boat in that situation. So a guy who has a 17, 18 foot or larger boat, they're going to have access to those areas that they can hunt, go make those successful hunts in, and that bigger boat is going to benefit them as compared to what we got, you know? Yeah. So it's really, you got to pick and choose kind of where you do the majority of your hunting at, and you're going to have to purchase a boat if you're looking to buy a boat or you have a boat, based off of those needs and those where you're going to be able to hunt at. You may be limited to some areas, but then you may excel in other areas and vice versa. But, you know, most of us have multiple buddies that are in the sport. We all kind of stick together as groups, you know. And other guys may have a boat that you could take in a certain situation. And then your boat may be used by y'all in a different situation, you know. So that's what we found has worked well for us, you know, over the last probably decade or so, you know. So a motorized boat is a good thing in a lot of cases. But then now, you know, as you move into out of the motorized boat category, you start looking at more traditional stuff like pirogues, sneak boats, kayaks. That's become real popular now, you know. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, there's a lot of good setups for that. What's your thoughts on those type of boats?
I mean, like, just like kayaks and pirogues and all that. I mean, you can just get to so many places you can't get to with a boat.
Absolutely. There's no doubt. You know, you look back at our ancestors, our great-grandfathers and our grandfathers and all the generations before us, before there was any kind of outboard boats when it came to duck hunting and surface drives and long tails and all that type of stuff. That was the old school way of hunting. That's how the market hunters hunted. That's how people fed their families by duck hunting and waterfowling back in the day, was paddling into spots, you know. It goes back as far as the Native Americans, you know. I mean, when they hunted for game, that's what they were doing. They were paddling into spots. And, you know, I get a lot of guys that say, hey, man, I don't have the budget to be able to buy a mud boat. And they think that they can't get into the sport because of that. And the first thing I tell them, and I've heard you tell friends that, is go buy a kayak. You know, go to your local sporting goods store, your Academy, your Cabela's, your Dick's Sporting Goods, whatever it may be. Buy you a good kayak. And you can access so much area that even the big motorized boats can't get to, or they just choose to overlook. And you can have so many good hunts and make so many memories out of a non-powered boat where you just paddle in. It's unbelievable. And we have added that to our setup over the last couple of years. You know, we always had a pirogue kind of, but me and you both got kayaks now. And we carry those kayaks either with us in the boat, and we'll park the boat, you know, we'll anchor it out in a deeper water area and we'll paddle into a certain area. Or sometimes we'll throw them in the back of the truck and we'll just go put it into an area where boats aren't accessing, you know. We'll scout out of them. We do that to stay quiet. And they offer the benefits of quietness, stealthiness, you know, low maintenance. You don't have motors and stuff that you're repairing, fixing. Just a lot of benefits to it. So adding a sneak boat like a kayak or a pirogue or something like that has made us better hunters because we can access areas that we didn't before. And we go into areas that the birds aren't getting the pressure that they are where motorized boats are running and stuff like that. And we had hunts last year where we actually paddled in and just did sneak hunts out of a paddling, you know, and had successful hunts. That was fun, right?
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun, man, doing that. So I would tell you, you know, even if you're an experienced hunter, once again, get you a kayak, get you a sneak boat, something like that that's quiet where you can paddle in. And, man, you're going to open up a whole different world of hunting and have a lot of fun doing it and have success probably that you never thought you might have, you know. Get out of that boat like we talk about. Get out of that boat a little bit. Get out of that boat blind that's comfortable. Go do some of that stuff, and it's going to help you definitely, you know. So that's something that we've done that we had a lot of fun doing, and that's some equipment and gear that's made us better over the last couple of seasons, you know?
Yeah.
What else? Anything else right now? Like major categories? We talked about guns. We talked about boats, sneak boats, all that type of stuff. Decoys. We talked about clothing, all that type of stuff. You know, when it comes to, you know, what about mapping real quick? Let's talk about that briefly. Mapping has come a long way as far as scouting goes, as far as navigating when we're out on the water. You know, we used to have to carry a GPS in the boat with us whenever we navigate the waterways. If we wanted to scout, we had to handheld GPSs that we'd go out and go buy a Garmin or something like that. And nowadays, we got some really good content on our smartphones now, right, Jackson?
Yeah.
So tell everybody kind of what we use and what you like about that.
Well, the app that we use on our phones that is actually really popular and a lot of people are starting to use it is called Onyx. It's the main app that we use. And, I mean, some people just say, like, in you know, Onyx, you can see, like, what's private land, what's public land. You can see, like, like when you zoom in, you can see like it's made for outdoors. You can see the woods, the holes, all the old cuts that were there, and everything like that. And I mean, some people just say like if you messed up, they'll see like why didn't you check on X? Like some people will just say that for now because like that's what people use now.
Yeah, you know, in Louisiana, they changed the laws over the years, in the last maybe decade or maybe a little over that. Where, you know, if you have private property, you used to have to post it. You had to have posted signs, you know? Yeah. And that's how somebody knew, hey, don't cross that boundary, don't go onto that land. Well, there's a law in Louisiana now where you don't have to post, and it's actually a law across a lot of the United States now, they've adopted it, where you don't have to post your land as a private land hunter. I mean, as a private land owner. So it's up to the person that's hunting to know whether or not they're on public land or private land.
Yeah.
And if they cross that boundary and they're on private land, then they are open, they're opening themselves up to facing legal consequences in that situation, you know? So these apps like OnX or HuntStand, and there's many others now that have come out. Well, OnX, when they came out several years ago, we were kind of started using them right away. And, man, for us as public land hunters, it made a huge difference and was a piece of gear and equipment that made our scouting time just more fluent. It was more efficient for us because we didn't have to guess anymore if we were on private land or public land.
Yeah.
You know, when we hunted the wildlife management areas, a lot of our management areas here butt up to private land.
Yeah.
So by having an app such as OnX like we use now, that was something that we could pull up. We could be out there in the field scouting, in the boat, whether it was in the boat or by foot. We could be walking through the woods, pull it up, and we could have those maps already pre-downloaded if you didn't have good cell service, you know, for the area that we were in, or you're running it off of cell service, like anything else on your cell phone, and you could see exactly what was public versus private. So that was huge, man. That was their big selling point, and that's still, to this day, a very efficient piece of equipment that has made our hunting a lot easier and a lot better for us, you know? So I think having a mapping system such as OnX or some of these other ones is very, very important for somebody who especially is a public land hunter.
Yeah.
You know? So that's something definitely important to invest in. And even if it's private land, you still get great aerial imagery and information based on your property that you can see with current weather conditions, all that type of stuff. Altitude, you know, topographic maps, all that type of stuff. It'll give you information that you may not, it may be your own property and you didn't even know about your own property, you know? So that's something that we think is a crucial piece of equipment as a waterfowl hunter. And it's something that's made us better as hunters, you know?
Yeah.
So hopefully this episode kind of has helped you guys. This is some stuff that we thought would be interesting that we've used equipment that we thought has helped us and may benefit you guys as well. And a lot of you are probably already using it. But if you're not, hopefully this gives you a starting point or some ideas to go out and test some of this equipment for yourself. And it may make your season more successful. So really, we're out of time now, Jackson. It's already been an hour. So we have had quite a bit of conversation tonight as far as the equipment goes. Like I mentioned, guys, hopefully that helps you all out. And we could probably do this in multiple episodes. We could probably go on about this. But I know I've had a good time tonight. I hope you guys have enjoyed listening. Jackson, I appreciate your feedback as always. And guys, if you enjoyed this episode, we appreciate you sharing it with your friends. Don't forget to check us out on social media. We always appreciate it. And thank you so much for listening to this all-new episode of Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors. Folks, welcome to Game Changer Boats. Don't fall for production boat quality. Many production aluminum bay boats and boats are constructed using 100 gauge in aluminum and are only welded on the outside of the hull, creating weaknesses that promote cracking. The lightness of the construction also increases the roughness of the ride of the boat. Game Changer Boats uses superior materials, thicker aluminum, and better built techniques for your boat. Rest assured knowing that we take pride in the construction of your next boat. If you're in the market for a new boat, visit Game Changer Boats at www.gamechangerboats.net or visit us on Facebook today to place your order. Guys, let's talk fishing for a minute. When you're looking for bait and tackle for all your fishing needs, look no further than Benoit's Performance Baits. Benoit's Performance Baits offer some of the best soft plastics for bass, sacalay, and saltwater species. Rather it's a day on the water or trying to catch a mess of fish for a family fish fry or a heavy bag to win a tournament, Benoit's Performance Baits has what you need and what the fish want. You can visit us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok to place your order today with Benoit's Performance Baits.